Welcome to Brand New Doctor. My name is Rolla Carajo, doctor turned healthcare graphic designer and brand strategist. This is the show where we share big ideas and look for inspiration in all kinds of places to help you grow a fulfilling career in healthcare. Following a path to success is one thing, but carving your own is another. So this is for you if you want to go beyond book smart. I'm joined today by Jessica Smith, the co-founder and CXO of SOMX, a communications and creative agency for healthcare. Jessica has a keen eye for strategic communication and not only co-leads at SOMX, but also serves as executive editor and regular host for Health Tech Pigeon, a leading media outlet which rounds up the sector's news. She draws upon her extensive experience as associate director at Fleischmann Hillard, a global PR and marketing agency, and brings a wealth of experience to the healthcare landscape. From navigating the intricacies of the NHS to collaborating with industry leaders, royal colleges, and charities, Jessica is a leader shaping the future of healthcare and technology. Jessica's work is defined by an unwavering commitment to purpose-driven communication. Her specialty is leading teams to create communication strategies that propel companies forward on their mission to tackle healthcare's most pressing challenges. So welcome to the show, Jessica. It is a real pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. Delighted to be here.
You are an inspiration to a lot of people, myself included, in the healthcare space. So I'm really excited to see this landscape from your perspective, to understand where you're coming from, your mindset, and where it is that you think we're all going as a collective. So let's dive right into the question. Before we dive into the episode today, I just want to take a moment to tell you about the upcoming launch event of a project I'm really excited to share. It's a celebration with an exclusive workshop for a health branding and design collective called And Matter. This is something I've been working towards for a couple of years now, which brings together creativity and medical expertise in an exciting new way. The name, the work, the philosophy is all based around a vision of humanizing healthcare through design. So what does that mean? Well, so much to come in the future, but for now, what that means is crafting brands and digital experiences in the healthcare and health tech space that embody humanity, healing, and trust. I'm going to show you a lot more of my design work. And because this is a collective, I'll also be working with some people I really admire, including Dr. Giles Morrison, someone who has featured on the podcast before. So what better way to launch And Matter than to celebrate and dive into an exclusive workshop on humanizing health brands? We'll be exploring how we can connect with our audiences on a deeper level and how we can transform the experience of healthcare for everyone involved, whether that's patients, clinicians, or other professionals. It's free for you to come, and it will be hosted at Health Foundry, a health tech hub in central London. You can connect with me and with other like minds who are passionate about reshaping healthcare with empathy and creativity. So if you are building a brand in the healthcare space, I would love you to join us for our launch on Wednesday, the 24th of April at 6 p.m. at Health Foundry. Follow the link in the show notes to sign up. I just can't wait to see you there. But for now, onto the episode today. The natural place to begin is to ask you about your journey and how it is that you have come to be where you are now. And I do want to ask you that, but I want to dig a little deeper into your thought process. So you may have heard this idea before that we're driven by the stories that we tell ourselves. That might be about who you are or where the world is. And whether we do it or not, whether we do it kind of consciously or not, we are kind of designing our reality as we go along. So I would love to know, what was the story that you were telling yourself when you started on this journey, and how has that changed with time to where you are now?
Excellent question, and a great place to start. And I think looking back to the earliest days of SOMX, before it was even SOMX, it was just a sparkle in our eye. I think that, so where I was in life was that I was in a global agency, great job, awesome team, enjoyed the work that I was doing. But I felt like I still felt like there was something that was missing. And I'd been doing some consulting work for some health tech companies, some startups. to help them understand how their business can benefit from clear and defined communication. And I love doing that because I felt so much closer to the purpose of what they were doing. And whilst I enjoyed my job, I liked the people I worked with, I liked my clients, I felt quite removed from that purpose. And I never intended to, certainly long-term, to be self-employed. The stories I told myself about being self-employed and running a business were that it was very hard, it wasn't very lucrative, and you had to put your purpose beyond your own needs to an extent. And I say that because my parents were self-employed, they ran their own business, and they very much valued quality time as a family above, I guess, like commercial success. And not that they were unsuccessful by any stretch, but for them, that was the trade-off, that they set up a business that allowed them to spend the time that they wanted to with us. But the trade-off was that it was never going to be like on the stock exchange. I mean, not many businesses down in Devon are, but so I think I told myself the story that that's what self-employed life looked like. That's what running a business looked like. It was a struggle. And I later find out it is a struggle, but the struggles are actually very different to what I believed them to be. And really, so my plan was that I would take a pause from being in the agency role I was in and maybe just do a bit of freelance because that was lucrative. I could save up some money, maybe do some traveling, maybe buy a house, whatever that might be. But I could do that for a while. And then I could find like my next career role. And I'd always been quite a career person. I'd always seen myself predominantly in kind of a corporate role, salaried, paying into my pension, very secure. I did not ever see a version of my story that really deviated from that. And I guess the story I told myself that was that this thing that became Somex was just this, it was this silly little thing that we were just going to do for a silly little while. And it would just, you know, top up the bank account, give me a bit of joy and purpose, and then I would go back to my desk. And I think I'm grateful that that was the story I told myself then, because I think if I looked at the version of myself and of Somex now, I would have been so intimidated and terrified of what it has become and been like, how the hell am I ever going to get there? I won't be able to do that. And I'm grateful that obviously where we've got to has definitely taken a lot of hard work, sacrifice and struggle, but it's evolved very naturally. It's never been forced and we've always strived for the success, but we've taken the struggle in our stride, I think. And I think you do that, like you go through one tough thing and then that's not difficult anymore. So then you go through the next tough thing, which you never thought you'd be able to deal with. And then you've dealt with it and it was shit, but you can do that again. And so you move on to the next thing. And so I guess the story that I told myself was that, as I say, it was this silly little thing that was for a short period of time. And as I say, I think I'm quite grateful that I did tell myself that story. And it probably speaks to a bit of imposter syndrome, but I don't think I would have been where I am today if I had a vision for what Somex is as it stands and where the direction we wanted to go in. Because I certainly didn't think that I was capable of that.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that makes a lot of sense because it's true that if you knew everything that you know now, a lot of the time, where whatever point you are in your life, you might feel differently about embarking on that journey if you could go back again. But I'm curious, really, do you think I think it's hard. It's easier to talk about things with hindsight, right? Do you think that you're aware of the kind of story or the mindset that you're applying to your work now?
Yes. I think more so than ever. And I definitely think that that has been a journey. It's been an ongoing journey to, I guess, almost surrender to the journey as it comes. I think in the early days, and I think now being much more active in that and being like, okay, how do I write that chapter? What do I want that chapter to look like? And I think as probably most people do as they get older and as you become more life experienced and to an extent experienced in business and relationships with people, I'm realizing that life goes through seasons. And I think, as I said before, this last season that I feel like is kind of coming to a close, I've kind of been going with the tide. And that's not to say I've not been driving forward. I've been open to opportunities and saying yes to things and seeing where we ended up. I think this next chapter for me, certainly, and I think I speak for James as well as a co-founding team, is that I think we're going to be much more intentional about how we author that chapter and how we want that to start and finish. And of course, there'll be deviation from that. But I think that we're certainly doing that thinking now to be much more prescriptive. And I think we are being bolder than we ever have been and braver with what we want, both in life and in work, and figuring out how do we join those things together as part of that same story.
Yeah. Well, that sounds really exciting from here. I'm curious to know, because obviously James is your co-founder and he's your fiance. You spend a lot of time together. You must have developed kind of an understanding of each other outside of a personal kind of environment in the working environment as well, which I don't think many people have. I think about for me, for example, when I see my mom at work, she's a dentist. I know she's good at her job, but I see her at work and I'm like, oh my God, you are really good at your job. And I'm amazed every time because I don't get to see that every day. But you kind of get that kind of both sides of each other. And I wonder, what does that do for your working relationship? How does that help to enhance the work that you do together? And what have you learned from each other that has helped you with working with other types of people as well?
I have to be really honest about the fact that, of course, there are, you know, lots of challenges working with the person that you live with and that you're in a relationship with. And I will say that there are times on calls with the team where James and I will disagree with each other, and we will disagree with each other more overtly with each other than we ever would with anybody else on the team. And I think that that can sometimes be uncomfortable. Like, and don't get me wrong, we don't have, you know, a big domestic or anything like that, but we'll be more direct with each other than we would ever consider being with the team. Our frustrations sometimes come out more with each other than they ever would with the rest of the team. And so I think with that, and with the empathy that we have for each other, that there is also a trade-off with the fact that that's also balanced with the negative feelings you feel towards each other too. And there's less of a filter in the way that you communicate that sometimes. And I think that sometimes I come off calls, and don't get me wrong, it's occasionally I come off calls and I think, God, that must have been really awkward. Just because, like, we've been snippy with each other and you think, okay, that probably wasn't cool. We need to talk about that. And, you know, that is the truth of our experience and the experience of our team. And, you know, I really credit them with being tolerant of that. As I say, I think like 99% of the time it's golden and it works super well. And I'm really overt with anyone we're hiring to say that it's important I explain that James and I are in a relationship, because that might put people off. And I would never want that to be a surprise to someone and walk in and be like, oh, okay, weird, but cool. And yeah, I guess like people will have their own kind of preconceptions of that. But I think in terms of like working together and living together, it's an observation I've made quite recently, which is that definitely to your point about seeing your mum work, like there is like, I absolutely adore seeing James be amazing at his job. It just really lights me up. And I think we do a really good job at supporting each other in that way, that I do think we really hype each other up. And like, we might have, I know, had a particular call that might have been a bit tricky. And there have been times where like, I for whatever reason, I was away, and immediately James called me and was like, you dealt with that call so well. And I was so impressed. And, you know, I really thought that you drove home those points. And like, I was just really taken aback by how well you dealt with that. And equally, like, you know, we might be in the middle of some negotiation and like, it's not, definitely not my strong suit, but like James just lands it. And I'm like, yes, I'm marrying that man. And he's my co-founder. And like, it's just, it's really nice because I think you appreciate all of that stuff on a deeper level. And, it, you know, to be really honest, I think it definitely strengthens our attraction to each other. But again, that comes with a trade-off. So there's more time and you're more exposed to all of the great things that somebody does. There's also way more time to be pissed off with somebody and way more reasons to be pissed off with somebody. The more time you spend with someone, the more interactions you have and the more opportunity there is to get pissed off and frustrated. And with that reflection actually came a deep sense of gratitude for how we have navigated that and the fact that actually the success of our co-founding relationship and even our relationship in total is against all odds in that respect. Because if you have so many more opportunities to argue and fall out and disagree and be annoyed at each other, the likelihood of it working out is much lower. And yet we've come out, not necessarily out the other side because you're never out the other side, but like we navigate that really well. And we just kind of take it in our stride. And I think that's something I'm really proud of. And I hadn't really realized that we'd done it until I kind of stopped to take a moment and was like, okay, wow. And I think the reason I stopped to take a moment about it was probably because I was annoyed with him. But I think the other thing is that also we have offices on different floors of the house. So it's not like we're sat next to each other and we're in each other's space all of the time. We meet in the middle for lunch. And we have our own space to work, which I think is really important. And we're really fortunate in that. But we have very separate roles, but we are able to communicate on a very deep level, not just through the language we use and the words we use. Like you just know something's up sometimes. You just have a sense of how someone's feeling. And I think it's also taught me, because of how much I see and know of James and how much that contributes to how he shows up or how he might be feeling on any given day, it helps me to recognize how little I know of somebody else's context and how they're showing up. Even people on my team who I speak to all of the time, I'm meeting with every day, there's still so much that I don't see and so much they're experiencing that I'm not party to. And that makes up so much of who they are and how they might be feeling. And I think that has really taught me, or not even taught me, like I always knew that you never really know what someone else is going through, but that's really driven home that point by being so close to someone and seeing so much of it. I realize how much I don't know of other people. And I think that has helped. I'm not a particularly patient person, but that's helped teach me more patience. It's definitely given me a deeper sense of empathy. And it's really helped me to, I always believed in people first, employees second. And actually, really, are you even an employee or just a group of people doing something? But it's really deepened my understanding of just seeing people as a whole human rather than in these kind of segments and facets. And some people like to keep it like that. But I just think that actually understanding a person for who they are and being able to navigate that in the way that you engage with them and interact with them is going to mean that you have a much better exchange with them and a better experience together. So I definitely think that those are things that I've learned from our relationship and connection that has made me a better leader, a better founder, and actually just probably a better person.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I think that can apply to lots of different kinds of people, even if you're not in a relationship, but when you consider the people that are close to you and the relationships that you have in your life, there's so much that we can draw from those relationships to help us to build new relationships in working environments. You know, what people appreciate, the kinds of interactions people appreciate from you, the sentiments, the gestures, all those kinds of things, they can apply in a different sense as well. So it's really cool to hear how you're kind of taking a more holistic view of people rather than, yeah, as you say, they're not just like employees or team members, they are kind of whole human beings in and of themselves as well. So yeah, I appreciate that. And also just really appreciate you for being very honest and candid. I wish that I would have been able to ask these questions to James. I just didn't know you guys were in a relationship at the time. So I think that's an important point to make.
Surprise!
But yeah, I am really rooting for you guys as well. It's really lovely to hear how you guys are bringing it all together with your personal life and your working life as well. So I guess I want to shift gears a little bit, and I want to ask you a question. I think it's an important question, particularly for women founders who are forging a path in the health space. And you've already spoken a little bit about just the complexity that, I mean, I think it is difficult for anyone forging a path in the health space, particularly in the UK, just given the way that things have been very traditional for a long time. But for women, there's that kind of added complexity of like family life and the approach that you might take to that. And I think I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge that, because I feel that in myself as well. But I ask this question because I think that it is particularly hard to get external validation that you're doing the right thing when you are a woman. And I know from my experience that doubt can be crippling just to move forward with any idea or my design work or business as a whole. So I just want to ask you, from your perspective, how has or has doubt ever been an issue for you, and how do you stop it from getting in your way?
100% it's been an issue, and you're absolutely right. My personal experience has been that there have been times where I have felt crippling doubt around myself, even around the business. And I think that I actually often say that one of the biggest things that's helped me is having a co-founder, because I think that I really admire solo founders, because I think it can be really, like, I found being a founder quite isolating, and I have a co-founder and I live with him. Going through that journey on your own must be so isolating, even more so, because there's no one who can just come and put a hand on your shoulder and say, you're doing a great job, just keep going. Or, do you know what? That was a really good thing that you did. That thing that you said was great. Whatever it is, that sometimes you just need that. You need someone to kind of be your cheerleader. And I think that has, like, learning to be my own cheerleader has been the hardest lesson, which is funny because I am everybody else's biggest cheerleader. But I realized that when, particularly now, as our team has grown, I cannot show up with huge doubt because my team are relying on me for strength of leadership and basically unwavering faith in what it is that we're doing. And that would be really unsettling for them if I was just like, I can't do this. This is awful. I'm terrible at my job. Like, that is not good leadership. And I have people relying on me. And I think probably that accountability has in some ways helped me keep in check. But I also think that I am relatively intentional about taking stock of where I'm at with things, expressing certainly intrinsically gratitude for the things that I've done well and the things that have gone well, and not writing all of the things that have gone well off to good luck, and identifying what it was that I did in those scenarios that contributed to that good outcome. And that's quite a good framework of almost being analytical about it, because you're looking at the data and the facts, and it's quite hard to argue with the data and the facts. It's really easy to talk yourself out of that compliment that somebody gave you. They're just being nice. They're just saying that to make me feel better. You can't argue with the facts. And even if it is just that, like, you did this really small thing, like, that was still the good thing that you did. And I guess I also had a lot of therapy. And I think that I would recommend it to everybody. I think that having therapy is a bit like going to the gym for your brain. And I am an avid gym goer, exerciser. I love being active. And there was a time in my life, and I actually still believe this now, there was a time in my life where I said, I think I would actually give up my gym membership before I would give up therapy. I'm not in therapy now, but when I was, there was a period of time where we were working through some significant things and some challenges, but actually having safe space at a regular cadence and interval to talk through how you're feeling and say things out loud. I think when you hear yourself say it, you start to realize how wrong you are and how sometimes ludicrous it sounds. And you start to join the dots and you think, okay, maybe not. But also you get challenged by the person on the other end who is objective. And I think that's important too, because it's not someone who's just going to tell you you're doing great because they really like you and because they want you to feel better. It's someone who is not emotionally linked to any situation that you're a part of. They are an objective outsider who can give you an unbiased view. And I think that was also quite validating. And I don't necessarily think you should be reliant on external validation, but I believe that therapy is for everybody, whether you're in a good place or bad. And I think that saying, like speaking your doubts out loud is a really powerful way of navigating them and working through them. And even if it doesn't allay them straight away, I think by saying the words, you start to think it through and strategize and figure out how you can tackle it. So I think it's that. But I guess my biggest doubts, I still have lots of doubts every day about different things, great and small. And, you know, for me, that often will show up as procrastination. People say swallow the frog. Things I find hard to do are the things that the things I put off the most are the things where I doubt myself the most. And much like the mountain, you then do them and you're like, oh, that actually wasn't that bad and I did quite a good job. So next time it won't be so bad. So sometimes, yeah, just doing the thing that you think you can't do proves to you that you didn't need to have the doubt in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a natural part of being a human being, and perhaps this is part of the forging of us as founders as well, is kind of learning to face doubt or to keep going in spite of doubt, managing these things, or learning when we need to pay attention more or less to the kind of thoughts or stories that we're telling ourselves. So yeah, I think that's a really well-rounded response, really, when it comes to therapy as well. Okay, so the last question is a question that I ask to all of the guests who come on the podcast. I'm very, very excited to hear your thoughts toward this as well. So imagine for a moment that you are the dean of a university and can influence the curriculum in any way you see fit for students who will become future healthcare and health tech professionals. What would you want them to learn about carving a path for themselves, or healthcare communication, or team building, whatever it is? What would you want them to learn, and how would you want them to learn it to lead them to more fulfilling and impactful careers?
Oh, I think I would love for them to learn what are their values, because I think when you know what your values are, everything else comes from that. So even if your interests change, your values are unlikely to change significantly. And I think when you're doing work or doing anything that is in line with your values, you are far more likely to feel fulfilled in what you're doing. It's going to be linked to what gives you purpose and your passion. And I think even at times where your passion and energy reserves might be running low, I guess it's kind of like a consistent habit. If it's tied back to your values, you have that strong foundation that it's built on. And so I would say invest time in figuring out what your values are, because that is the foundation that you can build everything else on. And I think that also helps you to understand, again, that you're a multifaceted being, and that regardless of whether or not you decide to pursue a medical career or be a designer or do both or be a dentist or a professional athlete, I think when it's aligned with your values, it ticks multiple boxes. I think often we can be forced down the path, particularly career paths, of what we think is the right thing to do that might tick one of our boxes. And it's okay to only tick one of, for it only to tick one of your boxes, but be open to the fact that that's not all your life has to be. And that's not the only place you need to focus or what have to focus your attentions. That you can aspire to be a multifaceted human with different chapters and seasons of your career. I've changed my career numerous times already. I'm only 33. I'm sure it will change time and time again before I get to the point of retiring, if I choose to retire, you know, in the traditional sense. And so I guess, like, you know, you can go through those seasons of change, but you'll always come back to your values. So that will never be time wasted, never be a wasted exercise. And I think it's also very easy to say invest that time when you're, you know, at university or whatever, because I think you don't really know who you are then. And I certainly did not get clear on my values probably until my 30s. But I think, again, like, give yourself grace with that, that, you know, having that life experience is what helps you define. So you don't have to kind of have this really clear set of principles from the get-go. Allow yourself to be shaped by the experiences that you go through. But I still think that probably if you had to do it, if you had to sit down for an hour and be like, what do I really care about? What matters to me? You could put five things on a piece of paper and, you know, two or three of them might change over your lifetime, but you'll have at least two that will carry for the duration. And that can just, it sounds very hippie. It can be a guiding light, I think. And I think it's a good way of, like, rationalizing, like, is this the right opportunity for me? Is the right decision for me? It's a framework to make decisions by. Yeah. So invest in understanding what your values are, but give yourself the grace to evolve and be human and be fallible.
Absolutely. I love that. This is, yeah, something that I've talked about on this podcast before. And I think, you know, other guests as well would agree with you too, that values are just such an important, as you say, guiding light. I think it's just, it transformed things for me, having that understanding of myself. And I think it bears repeating, because the truth is that when you go to university or you start a career or anything like that, nobody really sits you down and tells you to do that kind of work. Actually, I don't think it's a normal part of, even when you're having, you know, I don't know if you used to have like a careers kind of teacher or like person at your school. there's no talk of what are your values. I don't think that ever comes up. I think they're just like, what are your grades?
They teach us about values or taxes or mortgages. They teach us about none of those things. Actually, are three important things that would set you up pretty well for life. I think anyone can write a CV, especially with ChatGPT these days. Here's some of my experience. Please turn it into a CV. ChatGPT can't define your values for you. You've got to see that thinking.
It's true. That's very, very, very true. That's very true. Unless you feed it a lot of data, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But I agree with you. We do definitely need to sit down and do that kind of work for ourselves, explore those things. And I think, as you say, we don't know everything as we're, you know, as we're going through life, we can't know until we've kind of experienced things, but at least be open to that or paying attention to the feelings that we have as we're going through life. So thank you so, so much for your time, for your wisdom and just your honesty and sharing. So really, really appreciate you.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I've thoroughly enjoyed this chat. It's been lovely.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Brand New Doctor. I hope it inspired you in your personal journey. Check out the notes for a summary of the show with all of the important links. And if you enjoyed this,